You are listening to episode 73 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Avenging the Death of Xbox. So, this week, we had an interesting talk about, or I read an interesting article about Xbox, and why it was one of the things that was really interesting about it was the author of the article happens to be one of the co-founders of the Xbox group, and he basically opens it up talking about the idea that, you know, this is like 14 years ago. What?
I was just like, the sun suddenly came out.
I can say your face like got all whitewashed.
I know, but I'm not complaining.
The sneeze.
Bring it. But I just can't see my screen anymore.
So this guy was one of the founding guys, and he talks about briefly about like how 14 years ago going through these what he called painful, pointless, and idiotic internal cage matches to get it started and funded. The hard selling of compelling and lucrative living room product to Bill and then Steve as he began to take over, a product that consumers will want and love and demand. And I'm actually still thrilled to see how far it has come and how many installed units it has. Talks about the quality of games and stuff, and basically is just saying, like, you know, he's waxing affectionately about the Xbox and sort of its steeped history. And basically what he was saying was...
For one of his 17 paragraphs.
Right, and I think what he was setting up was this idea that this initial conflict of the fact that they were originally against it, and it's like this been this huge success for Microsoft. It's not one of their main revenue drivers yet, but it's still a very big revenue driver, and many would argue that it's, you know, the future of what they do because it's their first real foray into, you know, contained computers, and you know it is you know comfortably positioned as one of the best options out there for home entertainment.
Totally.
And basically, what he was talking about.
If I owned a television, I'd probably have one.
Yeah. No. And understandably, I'd probably have an Apple TV.
Well, I'd have that
I don't
too.
Play video games. Yeah, we could say, who are we kidding?
I'm going to spend money on a television, come on, right? Yeah, on the sound system, too, to back it up.
It's an extra $100 for something that's, like, ridiculously awesome. Why wouldn't you?
Especially if you got your iPad where you can just kind of flick movies over.
I know, man. And they've got, like, the... Anyways.
Xbox.
You almost got me on the tangent. So the Xbox is, you know, this interesting little thing that they got going on. And basically this guy starts to get into this idea that the Xbox is, especially in the last 5 years, he said it's become very painful to watch because, you know, started out as the newcomer against two major incumbents, the PlayStation and Nintendo. It came in off cycle. Usually, you know, Sony and Nintendo for a long time would you know, every 5 years would upgrade against each other. And they came in, and there was kind of this at that point there was an there could only really be two competitors in the market. There was only enough space for two systems because every time there were three systems, eventually one would die. Whether it was the newcomer or one of the incumbents, it just didn't seem like people had the tolerance for more than two platforms. And the Xbox really kind of, you know, came in, proved that they could make it. And the thought at that point was either, well, then Sony or Nintendo is going to collapse. And really neither of them did.
But I guess it's they survived an entire cycle, so it is
right. It really in a cycle and a half. I mean, it's significant, and a lot of that I think has to do with the fact that it was Microsoft on this venue. Because I think early on it would have been if Microsoft had to sell the Xbox for, you know, at a profit, even a small 1% profit, were basically, even if they had to sell it at cost, nobody would have bought the Xbox. It was the fact that they were, you know, they put $1 billion aside to take losses on the device just to get the platform out there early on at a reasonable price point. And it really wasn't until the X60, you know, from a real perspective. Well, obviously,
I'm sorry, you're totally breaking up, man.
Let me turn down my bandwidth. That looks awful.
Hey, as long as I can hear you, that's the important part.
Does that help?
I think so. Keep going.
So basically, the Nintendo, what?
I just love it.
There you go.
Black and white.
So for those of you that are listening and not watching, I just turned down my bandwidth requirements on the Google Hangout, and it changes your image to this, like, really janky black and white image. It's terrible.
Which is awesome because you can see all the stuff behind you.
I know, and it's like I'm completely whitewashed out.
But, I love it.
So anyways, the Xbox is so basically what his argument at this point is that, you know, it kind of came into its prime, it did really well, and then Microsoft started to excel, and now they're just resting on their laurels. They're not doing anything with it. And, you know, which some would argue, well, the games are getting better, and, you know, you had the Kinect come out, and they've got all these different, you know, venues for turning it into a home entertainment system. And basically, he's coming at it from this argument that, yeah, sure, they've done some good stuff, but really and truly, like, there are some incumbents that are heating up, and Microsoft should be far and away the best at all this. And he brought up some examples about, like, comment screens, or not comment screens, but, like, messages that would pop up where it'd be, like, you know, where the platform feels very Microsoft-esque in that it, you know, it has updates pop up, and it, like, it can't tell you how long the update's going to take. It doesn't know if there are more updates afterwards, and you might have to restart the system multiple times in order to finish the update. You know, whereas in the modern smartphone, the modern, you know, computers, everything is like, no, don't pop those sorts of warning labels up. Just have it do one upgrade or update, and just, you know, annoy people in that, well, it takes an hour, but yeah, but it does it all automatically. And just different questions that it asks, like, you know, should I go to this hard drive or this hard drive? And you're like, why don't you just know the answer to this? Like, why can't you? Which he's basically talking about usability and user interface stuff, and saying that they've fallen behind on it. But the other thing that he's really, really, really griping on is this idea of the fact that there's no real community for downloading.
So before you get there, let me just summarize what you've said so far. So basically what you're saying is they came in, 7 years ago-ish? No, more than that. And have done very, very well. You know, they've reached a massive market share, and, you know, they're successful. And potentially as a result of that, they have started to relax. You know, it's funny. We saw the same thing happen with XP. Have a successful product, then they just kind of go, all right, let's take it easy. And so they did a very similar thing with this. And it sounds like as a result, there's some things that, 7 years ago, not a big deal to have these screens. But a lot has kind of happened in the last 7 years in terms of consumer expectations on how systems should work. And, you know, and you can thank Apple a lot for pushing that with iOS and less of an extent to Android. But there's some things that Android does that are very, streamlined. And so as a result, it has started to feel very dated and kludgy, and have some of these Windows 7 or Windows Vista feels to it. We're like, dude, just let me download it. It's okay. You don't have to warn me. You don't have to tell me it's, you know.
Right.
Because I think one of his, he had a whole bunch of like tiny gripes where he's like, you could just tell that they have let it get old and have gotten lazy on it and have kind of forgotten some of their core principles, I guess.
That's exactly it. Before I get into the big one, he brings the example of the Kinect and how the Kinect is, you know, this really, really cool piece of hardware, and it hasn't gone anywhere for really, you know, exciting people. And just, you know, we've talked about it before on this show, like different things that it's like simple things that you could do to make really, really dynamically bring it into games and make it exciting. And they still, like, the number one way to those like stupid, you know, racing games where you put your arm out like you're racing the car and you don't, but you don't have a steering wheel in your hand. And if you just like stand there without moving, it automatically drives you through the course and you get at least second place. Like,
really?
Oh yeah. Have you never seen those videos or done it yourself? It's so stupid.
That's
if you
awesome.
Just stand there still, it will automatically guide you through like the course. It's sort of like one of those like one
wow.
of those it's like one of those rides in like theme park rides where like there's a rail that your car's on and it can only deviate like 2 feet left yeah. and right of the rail. That's exactly what it's like, and it's so stupid because it's not
sensitive enough to actually do a good job. They built in a bunch of AI to help you out.
Exactly. Sweet. And, you know, so it's just like, which is the worst sort of thing. Whereas, like, I have always said that I think it would be really, really cool. And this is the sort of thing that you could really easily do with it. You got your controller in your hand where you can move around. Like, you've got your little black op dude that, like, he's, like, going through the course. And then, like, when you want to command your, like, your group of guys, you put your hand up in the air to tell them to stop. You point left and they'll go left. You point right and they'll go right. And, you know, and where you have these really dramatic hand gestures for commanding other AI, but for you playing in your character, you've got really fine articulated motion in your controller, and so you just take yeah. your hand off to do it. You sit there and go, like, little stuff like that is like, you know, why can't you do that, Microsoft? Like, you know, and but there's like, they give no direction, they give you this hardware, and then they don't really do anything to really push, like, this is what you can do with it. You know, not to mention the fact that it's got dynamic, like, voice recognition stuff, so it's not just being able to you do hand motions, you can also like yell at the game, like, just send ships over there, go do this. You like point at the screen and have it like yeah. send ships here, send ships there, and then get back with your, like, the idea of being able to get fully involved in the game and communicate with the screen on multiple different levels. You know, and it's funny, it's one of the reasons why I actually like the idea of touchscreen laptops, because you're, like I said, you know, I think from a user interface perspective, it's not the same as having a big screen. You can get up in it, but like if you were playing a game where you got your mouse and stuff and you're like going, and then all of a sudden you need to like click on the screen to like I could see this. You're playing a game mm-hmm. and you get some weapon and you hit the weapon and it brings up a screen for 10 seconds. And in 10 seconds, you have to select a whole bunch of different targets on the screen. And you just tap the screen with all these targets, and at the end of 10 seconds, your character goes into, like, his super bullet time thing and fires his gun at all the different targets. And then it, like, goes back into regular play mode. Stuff
yeah.
like that, where you're like, that's the kind of innovation where you could make a game or you could work with somebody to show, let's do something crazy. Let's do something new and unique. I know what you're asking right now. Well, that's a great idea, Matthew. Why don't you develop a game like that? And I'll tell you why. It's because I don't know how to develop games. And
fair enough.
You know.
Well, and you don't have the whatever. How much is it? The $1,500 or $15,000?
That is, I would say. Thank you for that segue, because that's what I was working up to. But it's $10,000 a year to be part of their developing community. Like, let's say you don't want to
wow.
be an Actisoft or, you know, an Activision, or you don't want to be one of your, you know, big time games where you're actually, you know, you have manufacturers making DVDs and sending them, you know, and putting them on store shelves. Let's say you're thinking, well, you know, the App Store on the iPhone and, you know, Android, those work really great. I can just click a button, download it. Now, Android, obviously, it's not perfect because it's not as secure, but you can put anything on there really easily. The App Store isn't perfect because it's, you know, takes a lot of bureaucracy on Apple's part just to manage the whole thing, but it's a little more secure. And so there's a balance there. You know, they're trying different stuff out, but there's nothing like that where it's, you know, where there's a low cost option for developers to get in there, put content on the system. And what he is basically saying was that is the biggest problem. That he as a developer has no interest in developing for the Xbox because, number one, that, like, being able to be a developer costs $10,000. Now, they do have, like, a low-cost, you know, area. They do have a very low-cost area of the system, but it's like for indie developers and nobody makes any money on it. So it's really this ridiculous like area. And he sits there and goes, you know, if you were to take the Apple model, where you get take a 30% cut of every game made, the developers get to set their price, then all of a sudden you would have this platform sitting in the living room that would allow just this huge explosion of, yeah, we can make video games. And what he recommends is you pay a $100 fee, like your, you know, Apple. Normal. And yeah, and then with that fee, it allows you to publish games and be part of the community. You can develop it on your Windows laptop PC and then test it directly on your Xbox. So assuming you have all the hardware, it doesn't cost any additional money. Yeah, and you sit there and you go, that's a really brilliant kind of simple solution to...
Yeah, but maybe they do the 10,000 to, you know, that's their, you know, their hurdle. They want to make sure that you mean it. You know, whereas for $100, yeah, you know, you could have people will try things for $100.
Yes. Okay. So I guess
don't know, maybe you do it where it's like, this could be interesting. You you charge $100, maybe even $200, and then for every game that someone submits, you charge a flat fee, and then you start splitting the revenue with them, to curb people from just putting junk out there.
Well, but my question is why are you trying to stop people from putting junk out there?
Well, because you want a quality app store. You don't want, just a bunch of garbage out there. And
so you're saying that the Apple app store is not a quality app store? Or are you saying that it could be done better?
I am saying that it can be done better. The way they deal with it-ish, kind of, is they look at all of them ahead of time. Right. And... you know, that's one way to deal with it. I know that's one of the complaints about the Android store, you know, is you really, really have to rely on user reviews to make sure that it's good. So it just makes it harder for a small new one to...
I will be honest. I you know, it's a good point. I mean, there was a lot of... when I was using my Android, my Samsung Galaxy S3, for that month or so, there was a bit of intrepidation about downloading random third-party apps. Like I didn't, you know, basically.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it's a solvable problem, and then you could reduce the barriers, is what I'm saying.
Really, and there's, like you said, there's not necessarily anything wrong with the cost of barrier being, you know, it does. There, you know, GameStop doesn't have very many bad games on their shelves. Well, that's not true, but it's not. Well, it's not like the App Store where, you know, okay, where there's just, you know, there are tons and tons. There, the bad apps compared, you know, vastly outpace the good apps. Just not on the leaderboards. And but because there's such a bar to entry, you know, unless you're serious about developing a high powered game, you're not going to. And maybe right. That's Xbox, or maybe that's Microsoft's strategy. But I think the reality of it is that that's not what people expect and want at this point. And it really stifles innovation. And
it's a different type
to
of
other venues.
I would say that it promotes one type of innovation. And if Apple came out with their Apple TV and, you know, did exactly what you said, $100 to get in, we'll take 30% cut. It's got a user-friendly SDK. You know, chances are they're not going to be making Call of Duty anytime soon. But they're going to hit another type of market for sure, and it could be – and it could explode and be huge.
You know,
in which case Microsoft will get envy and, you know, try to go after it. That's what they do.
I think what the reality of it is that what Microsoft wanted was they wanted a small division of people who could really work with serious game developers and really help push and advertise that. They didn't want to deal with the mess. And in the industry, that made sense because basically, you know, like before there were any application stores on your consoles, you'd go to GameStop and get a game from GameStop, and that was like, that was all there was to it. But now that, like, you know, and so they wanted their app store to feel and look like, or, you know, have the same quality as a GameStop, as a Target, as a big box place where you can go and get big time games. And how they did that was they basically said, we're only going to deal with the big studios. And this is very similar to how Apple does iAds, where, you know, Apple doesn't allow people to, you know, to do $100 for put their ads in a couple of apps. They only work with major big time, you know, ad buys. And the idea being that we're going to have higher quality ads. So yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense that you would do that. But I think the problem is that at this point, you know, there's been a working strategy for these, for, you know, the little applets, you know, little games, short, you know, small games. And the thing is that it's like, these are definitely two different audiences that you're going for. And what you could do is you really could have, you know, two different levels of store. You could have the cheap / free apps, and you could have the super expensive. And maybe with the super expensive apps, you would have a very high, you know, bar entry where you talk about, you know,
adding a completely different store, not necessarily integrating cheaper apps.
Right. And I guess why this is important, I think, is because there's one big competitor that Microsoft doesn't like to think of as a competitor, but Valve sure likes to think as a competitor, and pretty soon here they're going to have a piece of hardware that you can put into your living room that is basically just a computer that runs all of your computers.
And, hey, you're breaking up pretty bad again, man.
I don't think it's me. I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Okay, all right.
We can do a little competition. You know, mid-podcast competition. What is your speed test? Because I'm running mine right now.
Okay. I'm at 5.
5 megs?
Yeah, which is the max of mine.
Okay, I'm at 18 up right now.
5.5, actually.
Nice. No, sorry. I'm at 19 down, and it looks like I'm going to be about 11 up. So,
jeez.
This is pretty cool. Cool in the world. You know who this is? This is Loki. This is it, man. It's happening. The Avengers have assembled just in time. Did you not hear that joke? Because I thought it was kind of funny.
No, I did. I was just, I tried adjusting my bandwidth thing. I'm not going to go white out, but I'll go one less. Okay. We'll see what happens.
All right.
I don't know. Okay, so anyways, you were about to talk about Apple.
No, I was about to talk about Valve. Valve is the you know, obviously the guys who make Half-Life and Portal and Steam. And so what they're talking about is this product called Big Screen. It's basically a platformer that is just a computer. It's a piece of hardware. You'll put it in your, plug it into your computer, and all it will run is Steam. You'll download your games over the internet. And the thing is, and this is the big thing, is that this is the model that Steam runs on. You download games, they're all direct download. They've got a great system worked out for really, really big time, you know, developers coming in, making sure that stuff populates the front of their pages and the front of their sales pages. But they've also got a ton of space underneath for indie developers and low-cost games and more experimental games. And not to mention the fact that whenever they do their big sales, they always do their indie bundles where they'll put together, you pay $10 and you get 5 indie games, which is great for the indie games because they get a bunch of exposure to whatever different, you know, it's, and they're sitting side by side with the real giant platform games. And you sit there and you go, so that's like an exact, that is working on computers and on, you know, your standard Windows computer. And the thing is that now they're the future enough where they're building a piece of hardware, because that's the weakness that they see in the Xbox, I have to believe, is that there's there's no real, you know, there's no way for that sort of distribution to be on already plugged into your TV. And it just really begs the question, you know, what the heck has Microsoft been waiting for? Why is this so easy for Valve to do and not for them? And then, of course, there's always the looming Apple TV SDK, where we'll allow third-party apps on Apple TV. And, you know, it's going to be – there will be all sorts of cool third-party apps, just like there are for the iPad and the iPhone. But one of the big things that people want are games. They want really low-rent, easy-to-play games. And, you know, where you can just kind of, you know, play Wheel of Fortune with your family, phrase-free, as some would call it. And I've been playing that game, and it's basically
game, right?
No, it's basically Wheel of Fortune, phrase free, yeah. And I have a friend who talked me into signing up for it, and I'm like, I'm all into it now. I'm gonna beat you. But those sorts of big time games where you can play it, you know, I don't know, or not big time games, but I mean like low, easy to build games, low bar to entry. People understand how to play it, but be able to do it on an Apple TV, I think would be a really big seller. And the thing is that as the hardware improves, you'll get better and better graphics, and you can start doing more and more heavy duty games. All you have to do is basically, like, you know, and the thing is, it's like Apple TV has the distinct disadvantage of there's no controller. Well, oh, you got your iPad or your iPhone. Yeah, but I actually want a controller. I want something with joysticks and buttons and tactile feedback. And
they're not going to make that.
No, of course not. But why isn't Microsoft, you know, why Microsoft is opening themselves up to a major assault by Apple when Apple finally decides to pull the trigger on a $100 gaming platform for the family, where you can use your, you know, where you can do, you know, I don't know, you can really quickly start to think about different types of games that you can, you know, build for that. And it's like, you sit there and go, it's so simple. You, if I can come up with 5 games in 10 minutes, that would be great. In you know, on an Apple TV, why wouldn't they be equally as great on Xbox? And why is Microsoft making it so friggin' difficult for, you know, people to get in on that platform? And then the big one and the other one that I want to bring up is this idea of you know, Android. There was a Kickstarter project that I was really proud of myself for not funding. I really, really wanted to, but they called it Game Stick. And what it was is it's literally a little Bluetooth controller. It's got a joystick and buttons, and embedded in it is this little stick. And it looks like it's about twice as big as a jump drive. And instead of a USB plug, it's got an HDMI plug. We'll plug into anything. It's like 2 inches long, like a half inch wide. And it's an entire Android system. You know, it's a system on a chip with power regulators and everything, and Wi-Fi, and you basically plug it in. Have I talked about it on the show before?
I don't think so.
And basically it's an Android phone without a screen. You plug it into a screen, it pops up onto it, and they wrote their own Android, and so it's their own interface, a console game. It's going to be like $100 for the entire package, and it'll plug into anything. It'll plug into your big screen TV. It'll plug into your computer screen, computer thing. And all the games are going to be really low cost, low bar to entry games. And the intention is to have them be fun shooter type games. This thing is like, you sit there and you go, that's the sort of thing that could really, really change the industry. If something like that were to take off on a platform as viable as the Android market. Like, you sit there and you start to look at these different people that are getting into the game, and the fact that Microsoft isn't already 2 years ahead on this is just frustrating, because it's like, you guys are, you've got this great product, you've got this great thing, and you're so focused on being able to swipe through your Netflix movies with your hand, and nobody likes doing it, it doesn't really work well, and you've got competition that's already outstripped you in some ways, and then their products are just getting to market, and it's, you know, it blows your mind. And all of this is going to lead into, I think, one of the Xbox's biggest threats, which is going to be Samsung.
Oh, we're still going. All right.
Very soon. But I don't need to, but I think that has a lot to do with the next topic, and I don't want to jump the gun on the cuts.
No, you're good, man. We're good.
Did you want to say anything?
I already said my thoughts on it.
Okay.
I agree. Xbox, they need to stop relaxing and acting as if they have a monopoly.
Right. And because the problem is that, well, number one, they don't, but it's not even Sony and Nintendo that's going to cause the problem. You know, it's the fact that if you look just pure numbers,
just have a habit of, they build a product and they go, we think this product's amazing, and then they stop.
Yeah.
And I don't know what those other people do, but they don't keep moving forward. They don't keep pushing. They stop until they go, oh, we need to keep going. There's now reasons to improve this, and then they got to start it back up again. Just for whatever reason, and it looks like it's a cultural thing, they really struggle with finding the next thing to work on and to do. They have to wait to see it, and by the time they see it, it's just painfully obvious to everybody.
Right, and one of the things that drives me nuts about Microsoft is that it feels like half the time they spend their R&D working on what's the next big thing in 10 years and completely skip, like, and act like they don't have to worry about what's going to be big next year.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, nobody's going to buy your stuff in 10 years if you don't worry about both, you know? And that's one of the things that, you know, obviously Apple has done great in the last decade is focusing on what's going to be hot next year at the same time that they're focusing on what's going to be hot in 10.
Yeah, and I think Google is also another great example of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Amazon to some extent is also doing that. We'll see about Facebook. Yeah. We'll see. They're still too young.
they're such a weird company. I think they might have what it takes, but
they like to change things for the sake of change.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced that it's based off of making it better, but every once in a while they get
lucky. Give me the latest example of changing things just for the sake of change that didn't make it better.
So in their Facebook app on the iPhone, they added voice messaging to it.
Yeah, okay, that's a pretty good example.
Thanks for making that. I appreciate it. You know, with you think about ping to, or poke, whatever it is. You know, that was another just me too. They added it. They're like, yeah, you could do this. And it wasn't fully thought through at all. Yeah. It's annoying that you have to actually download the app to use it. You could make it so that you can at least receive them without having to download the app.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's, you know, all of their other third party or their split apps also work in the main app. And one of the things that drives me nuts, I've just realized this because I now have a larger screen iOS device, is those devices aren't on, or those other apps like Messenger and Poke aren't optimized for the iPad. They're optimized only for the iPhone, which is cool unless you have an iPad. I don't understand that.
They do a ton of, we'll throw it up there and see what sticks, and then we'll iterate it on it later.
Which is the worst strategy. I mean, it's worked pretty well for Google, unless you liked Wave. But it's helped them be successful, I should say. As a company, it's been a good strategy. As a user, sometimes it can be infuriating.